Welcome to the Full Draw Full-Time Podcast, the podcast for the Western bow hunter, with your hosts, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows and Cody Kellum, co-founder of Full Draw Film Tour.
Welcome back to the Full Draw Full-Time Podcast. This is your host, South Cox, along with the co-host, Cody Kellum. Good to talk to you again, Cody. It's been, almost 2 months since we've been in front of the microphones.
I know. It's been way too long. I think, you know, last time when we were recorded, we were up on the mountain in Nevada, and now you're back home in California, and I'm up here in Oregon, so...
Speaking of the Nevada podcast, we kind of left you guys hanging out there without finishing up the last couple of days. So we have plans later this week to get on the horn with Zach here and record our final episode there to kind of bring you guys up to speed on how the events of the last couple of days on the mountain played out, and then also catch up with what Zach did following hunting in Nevada, how his season went himself with a bow in his hand.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. And it's kind of fun catching up on listening to what you and Wes and Kendall and Justin had going on down there in Colorado. Sounds like a brutal, crazy weather, but all good in the end.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I feel so fortunate that Kendall had checked the weather forecast the week, before we left, and saw that it was going to be unseasonably cold and with excessive precipitation, and so I adjusted my clothing accordingly and came a lot better prepared, and it would have been even more miserable had I not had that that heads up there. It was still not fun, but it would have been and I say not fun, it was just dealing with the rain, the being wet, was the not fun part, and then it being as cold as it was, we got pretty chilled on our glassing points a number of times, but man, it was so much better had I not gotten that heads up. I got some extra insulated pants from Sitka, and that made a huge difference when you'd be sitting up there glass, and I just zip on a pair of their insulated pants over my regular pants and bump the comfort way up there.
That would make it. Yeah, I've never worn any, like, are the down pants or just synthetic insulation?
Yeah, synthetic insulation. Yeah, yeah. So they're basically like a zip-off rain pant, but they're insulated, and it makes it, it's like having a sleeping bag wrapped around your legs. Very nice.
Yeah, no doubt. So, and then you've been just cranking away, slaving away in the shop, building bows and.
Yeah. So, I mean, geez, after pretty crazy schedule, after our Nevada hunt, I got home and I was home for 5 days, which I got, I think, a bow or two built, as well as then unpacking from Nevada and then repacking for Colorado before I, hopped on a plane and flew to Utah there to meet up with my hunting partners out there. So just like a really brief, family visit and appearance in the shop. And then I was gone for 12 days to Colorado, and I got home from Colorado and I was home for 2 days, long enough to pack our big trailer and my truck. And then my employee and I and my family all loaded up, and then my wife's two stepsons, my wife's oldest boys, we loaded up the other car. So we had a caravan and bombed it out of California, headed to Colorado to get my wife and kids moved over there. So I'm still in California right now, but my wife and kids are there in Colorado, and so we got out there, I think it was like the 10th of September. left here on the 8th and took us two full days of driving to get there, and lots of potty breaks with the kids.
I was going to say, are we there yet?
Oh my good. Yeah, that's started before, you know, we'd even got just a couple hours out of the house, and they're great travelers, fortunately. And we don't let them watch a whole lot of TV. So, you know, we got a little, you know, one of those little DVD players, the dual screen ones. And so we just popped in some movies, and man, you didn't hardly hear a peep out of the back seat, except for some eruptions of laughter and giggling and all that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, actually, a couple of pretty funny stories, and I don't think I have told these on the podcast. So hopefully they're fresh stories. But so on our first bathroom break, we were, you know, a couple hours from the house, and we all pile out of the truck, and my daughter, you know, doesn't notice as we walk away from the truck, you know, the trailer there. So we, on our walk back to the truck, she all of a sudden stops in the middle of the parking lot, and like, she just has this revelation, and she looks, she goes, "The trailer is stuck to the truck." It was so funny with my 5-year-old. And then, go ahead.
Yeah, no, just the realization that it's hooked up to the truck, that she thinks it's just a separate entity.
Yeah. So yeah, it was totally funny. I was dying laughing. And then, so we're driving, you know, we're probably about 5 hours into our trip now. And all of a sudden out of the back seat, Sophia, the middle one, the 7-year-old, goes, "Are we still in America?" And then, I'm trying to kind of teach them a little bit about geography as we're driving. And so as we leave California and get into Nevada, across the state line into Nevada, I announced that we're now in Nevada, and she goes, "Do they speak English here?" It was a riot, because the two older stepsons have done a lot of traveling in Europe, and the oldest one's got a German girlfriend and stuff. So she's kind of learning, you know, about the world at the same time as, you know, about the states, and kind of is the geography a little bit confused there.
Gotcha. I love it.
Yeah. So pretty funny. So kids say the darndest things.
Yeah. So families out there, I'm imagining at Estes in September, bulls were screaming at your doorstep, or what was that like?
Yeah. You know, it was kind of interesting. They weren't as revved up as I thought they were going to be. And I'm trying to remember, it was after I left. So I got back there on the 10th and I left on the 20th. So I was back there for 10 days, you know, working on the house, and we had, paint the whole upstairs and coat the hardwood floors and then get all the stuff moved in and the house set up and drawer pulls put on cabinet doors and, you know, stuff like that. So you wouldn't have to use your fingernails to open the doors. And so, you know, I didn't spend a whole lot of time outside, but we did go into town a handful of times and so, you know, driving around to see the elk and see them chasing around and all that. But it wasn't until after I left on the 20th, maybe, you know, in that next week, that my wife said they really fired up and got going and you could hear them screaming. I mean, we did hear some bugling and stuff, but it was kind of interesting. It seemed like, you know, just after, or like that last weekend of bow season, what would have been the last weekend of bow season there in Colorado, they're just really starting to get revved up.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. My wife was sending me pictures, you know, from her. She'd bring the kids to school and then go out on a walk around the lake. It's about a 3.5-mile trek around the lake on this walking trail. And the bulls like to hang out, or the elk like to hang out down there on along the lake there. I think there's some, might be a couple holes in the golf course there, or maybe it's just a bunch of green lawn, but in any case, they like hanging out down there. So she'd send me videos or pictures of, you know, big bull rounding up his harem and all that, or screaming. And there was constantly satellite bulls out there trying to shag a cow or two off the herd. And so pretty neat for her to be able to see those, you know, that kind of wildlife that close.
Yeah, I saw a video, I think it was on Facebook or YouTube, and it was in Estes Park, and a bull was walking on the golf course, and he bugles on the green and then turns and just does a dry wallow with his horns on the green. I mean, just absolutely destroys it. And I'm like, I could only imagine how much those greenskeepers just want to shoot everything. Uh-huh. But wildlife on golf course. I mean, I just was like that. I guess I got to go see it for my own eyes. I saw Brian Call where I'm not exactly sure where he's living there in Colorado, but there's a bunch of local elk running around, and he was videoing them, you know, bull pushing his cows through the parking lot. It's like, definitely doesn't happen in downtown Roseburg.
No. Yeah. The elk are smart enough to stay away.
Occasional Columbia whitetail buck rutted up in November. That's about it. But
yeah. Yeah. We've got cottontails in our, you know, front backyard, which is, you know, of course, not an unusual occurrence, but these guys are so tame. It was pretty funny. We were unloading my car trailer. So I've got an enclosed car trailer that I bought specifically for this move, and then we'll turn around and sell it when we're done. But it's been great for hauling, you know, huge loads back and forth. Well, the first day we dropped the drop gate on it, and we're, you know, hauling stuff in and out of it. And I walk out to grab a load, and there's a rabbit inside the trailer checking it out.
Almost transplanted to California.
Yeah, totally fearless. You know, we were able to, you know, get on the ramp of the gate there and watch this little rabbit there as he's kind of checking stuff out, and totally didn't, you know, could care less that we're sitting there watching him. It was pretty funny.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's the kids, of course, love that, and they're just dying, can't wait for it to snow. And I tell you, I've been out here now for, well, I'm heading back end of next week, and that'll be 5 weeks that I'll have been gone at that point. So it's been quite a stretch in an empty house out here by myself. It looks pretty bare in here. It looks like someone backed a moving truck up and ripped me off when I was gone for the weekend or something.
Really? Yeah. So you're pretty much like back to the college days, bachelor, you know, couple things in the fridge and.
Yep.
Some plastic furniture for your dining room set. And
yeah, I only have a dining room set. My wife took the table and all the chairs. And so I was going to bring over a piece of plywood and some sawhorses, but we have a breakfast bar. Pretty ghetto, but we've got a breakfast bar with some, you know, stools, and I've been able to just, you know, use that. So the nice part is that I drive my wife crazy with my piles of stuff that I'll leave around, and she's constantly picking them up, and it drives me crazy because then I'll set something down and I'll turn around and she'll grab it and go move it somewhere else and I can't find it. So the nice thing is that I'm able to set something down and turn my back on it, and it's still there when I turn back around again. So it's pretty funny, you know, the things that the idiosyncrasies that, you know, spouses have to deal with each other. And then when there's some separation there when you don't have to. And so it's one of the things that I appreciate with them not being around, but there's very few of those.
Yeah, it's almost to a T the same scenario here at my house with my wife. Uh-huh. I'm notorious for bringing in, you know, my hunting pack and setting it down in the spare bedroom, and I kind of take over that room as, you know, you know, but it might stay there for a day or two or a week or three, right. You know, until it's like, yeah, you better pick this up or else it ends up in the trash can. So,
right.
I actually, this year I got one of those big Rubbermaid action packers. It's like, I don't know. I think they're about $100 at Home Depot, but they're like 4 foot long, I think. And it's got a lid. Uh-huh. I think you can even padlock it if you want to, but that thing was such a nice, instead of just having like multiple totes, I had just that one big tote, and I kind of had it organized. I had a big cardboard box divider in there where I extra mountain houses in my day food that I put together, put that mm-hmm. all in there. And then I had kind of my, extra game bags, spare game bags, and then kind of just through like personal hygiene type care and, you know, just whatever kind of things. And then the last little bit of it was, you know, my backup tent and my other spare sleeping bag. It all fit in one. And it was pretty handy. So it was like, I could be mobile from my truck to if we had a base camp or whatever, just with that one tote. So.
Yeah. No, you know, it's interesting. I listened to your guys' Oregon from the field, or not Oregon, Idaho podcasts. And
were you as depressed as we were?
Actually, no, I actually really enjoyed it. I've been there before when you're getting your butt kicked and you just can't seem to, you know, find, you know, animals and you're racking your brain trying to figure out what to do. And so I could totally relate, you know, from the situations that you guys were experiencing there. But I was going to say one of the things you guys had talked about that was, you know, having that gear at your, you know, extra tent, an extra sleeping bag, extra sleeping pad at your truck. If you're doing a meat haul and to be able to roll in to your truck after dark or something and then have, you know, some way to spend the night there at the vehicle so that you don't have to, you know, go into town, get a hotel or whatever. But makes it a lot more efficient and kind of got me thinking I've been flying back to Colorado to hunt in the fall, you know, for the last, I don't know, 15 plus years. And so, you know, obviously you're trying to keep your weight down. So I haven't been able to do, you know, something like that. And in Nevada, I've got my packer lives at the bottom of the hill. And so if I need to stick something in the freezer, then I can just go to his house and do that. But where I'm hunting in Colorado is a long ways away from my house. And so I'll be able to, you know, I'll be able to drive to the trailhead, but then just to have that extra gear cache there, you know, kind of got me thinking about, you know, my approach and how I'm going to do that for next year.
Yeah. I don't know how I stumbled onto that. I think kind of out of just blind luck. I mean, I brought an extra sleeping bag in the fact when we went to Colorado the first year in 2013. And so when we got there, my pack was already packed. I'm like, well, shoot, I got this other sleeping bag and pad. I'm just going to sleep on that. And then since that trip, it's like that thing goes with me no matter what, because, you know, like you said, you got to come out to the rig, make a meat haul, or things get wet, whatever it is. I mean, you're backed up with gear, but it, you know, you don't have to pull apart your pack if you're changing location. We did that a couple times this year there in Idaho where we moved locations and drove, you know, that night, get there at the trailhead again late. And last thing you want to do is set up a tent or do, you know, we're notorious for crawling underneath the pickup and sleeping underneath the truck. But
I have yet to do that, but that didn't sound like too much fun right there.
Well, that in that particular case, the Toyota Tundra is a little low clearance. It was tight, but I don't know. Or I've got a Tacoma that I hunt in here locally and it's got a canopy on it. And I just throw a ground cloth and my pad and my sleeping bag in the back of the truck and call it a night. So it's pretty mobile. I don't know. I think that's, I guess one thing that, I don't know if it's a good to be that way, but I'm very like, my thinking is I'm never going to just have a base camp set up and hunt. I'm always going to be mobile where I can, everything's with me at any point in time in the truck and we can make camp that night there or move on to the next and keep trucking. So,
yeah, you know, that's a smart way, you know, to be efficient like that. Hey, on a total side tangent, and this may benefit some people and may, and I don't know, like every state's the same, but, you know, I've been trying to get my residency established I was hoping, you know, that my residency would be established for Colorado before, you know, before the draws for next year. And I was really concerned when my move out there got delayed. So it looks like, so my family got moved out there the 10th of September, and it looks like I probably won't be out there till, you know, January-ish. I'm working out here in my shop, and I've got to build another building out there. And I've got some projects I have to finish up out here in California first. So my carpenters are coming out here. We're going to work out here, knock that stuff out. And then meanwhile, while they're working on the projects, I'm going to get all my bow orders caught up, hopefully before Christmas. And then after the first of the year, then I'm just going to put my business on ice for a month or two while we go out there to Colorado, knock out this building. And then I'll come back here, grab all my equipment, and then haul it out there to Colorado and get set up. That's the plan. But anyway, that's a side tangent from my side tangent. But back to the residency thing. So that's preventing me from living in Colorado full time right now. And my concern was, is that, you know, it's like, that's where my home is. But, you know, right now I'm residing, you know, on average of three, probably it's going to be about 3 weeks a month in California, and then another, you know, week in Colorado. And so I dug into the fish and game regulations to see what the rules are. And, they had a phone number in there to call, to get, if you have a situation that's, you know, not totally clear, if you have a home in two states, said, and you have any questions, then call this phone number. So I called them, I explained my situation. So when I went out there to Colorado the first time, not the first time, but back there in September, I went to the DMV like the first day that I could out there, and that was open, and to get my Colorado driver's license. And on my driver's license, I don't have my middle initial on my, so you have to bring in your social security card. I mean, there is so much documentation you got to bring in there. It's unbelievable. So on my birth certificate, or excuse me, on my driver's license, no middle initial. On my social security card, I had my middle initial. So despite having brought all the documentation they wanted, because of that one letter that was on my social security card, they needed my birth certificate stamped from the state, or my passport. And of course, both of those are back in California. So now I'm going, oh, now I'm screwed, because I'm not going back till, you know, just before Halloween. And that puts me less than 6 months from the draw. So, you have to have residency for 6 months before, you know, you would apply for licenses. So I called this phone number, and in the pamphlet there, the regulations, and kind of explained my case. And the lady said, well, she said, if you have registered to vote or registered your vehicle in Colorado, then you can go in and apply for an exemption in one of the local fish and wildlife, you know, branches there prior to the draw. And as luck would have it, I registered my truck there in Colorado. So I have that documentation. And additionally, you know, came out of Safeway one day, and there was somebody out there mustering up people to register to vote. And so I registered to vote out there. So I'm golden. So I'll be able to go in and, you know, despite not having had my driver's license out there for the requisite 6 months, I have fulfilled the other obligations to be able to meet their residency requirements for next year.
Sweet.
Yeah. So I'm super stoked there. So that
means your elk, you got a chance of drawing then as a resident?
As a resident, it's my understanding is, for that unit 76, which I've been, you know, building points for, non-resident, it took 12 point, if I remember correctly, it was 12 points got you 80% chance of drawing, and 13 points was 100%. But at 6 points as a resident, it was 100%. And if I remember correctly, I've either got 8 or 9. So it should be a guaranteed draw for me, you know, if I decide to pull the trigger on unit 76 for next year, which is super exciting. The only thing is like, there's two reservations I have. One is that it's like, I would almost rather spend some more time, you know, if I'm going to go out there by myself, I'd rather spend some more time out there monkeying around with elk, trying to call them and learning more and all that, than I would be to, you know, to have this many points built up and then, you know, go in as, I won't say a rookie, cause I've done, you know, I've elk hunted quite a bit. And although I won't say with great efficiency, but, you know, I'd hate to burn a bunch of elk points out there trying to, you know, experiment with calling and all this. But, if I can, you know, if Wes wants to come out there and video, if I can, you know, bend his arm and because I would still do my opening week mule deer hunt first, and then I'd have to do some serious negotiations with my wife to be able to go on either back to back or, you know, another hunt that was, had a small gap between it, you know, for elk, again. So I gotta do some game planning on that one for sure.
Well, I'd say I could help you on the elk world, but after this year, getting my kicked, I don't know. I question my ability a little bit, but yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is like, you know, from the little experience that I've had in Unit 76, what I could see is that it's like, you know, going to Estes Park and hunting elk, you know, as far as the numbers, there's a lot of elk. And of course, they're not going to be as dumb as, you know, or as habituated to people. Let me rephrase that as the elk in Estes Park. But I mean, my buddy Leonard and I drove in there, and I can't remember how many bulls we saw just from standing on the road, but it was probably into double digits. And they're and this is, you know, the first week of the season, they're screaming their heads off. They're, you know, we could see multiple harems, you know, in the distance, and we could see bulls down in the canyon right below us. And I mean, it was insane. It was like elk paradise.
Well, I'm actually just on the Go Hunt site here, checking this out in that unit. General size 300 to 330, trophy potential 340 plus. And with you as a resident, you were right on the numbers. Six points is 81%. And after that, you're 100% draw. So if you have 7 or 8, you would draw it. So,
yeah. And that's one of those things too. It's like, you hate to build more preference points and just be redundant, you know, it's like, I'd be better off just to burn what I've got now and then start building them again, you know, with the hope of drawing it again in the future.
Bull to cow ratio is 42 to 100. Man, that's crazy. Well, I might have to volunteer myself. Well, it's interesting is I've got 17 points for elk in Oregon and 17 for deer. So the top two hunts in Oregon, you know, Winnaha and Metolius for bow hunts. Well, I think Metolius, I think this year I'm close to drawing. I got to double check the numbers. And with what they did with Winnaha last year and the fire, giving the guys the opportunity to turn back their tags, I think the numbers are going to project out a little bit further. But I've got a friend that's got 19 points that wants me to put in as a party. So we'd have 18 this year, 18 points was an 80% draw. But I don't want to draw both the tags in the same year to just time wise. I want to be able to vote, you know, as much as I can. And, so next year I may just be staying in Oregon to hunt elk if we do decide to try and draw. But
is that Metolius hunt an early or late season?
No, it's a late season hunt. It's a November hunt. But the factor of just time being gone away from home and work, you know, that, cause I think that season's like a 3-week season and I would try and spend at least 2 weeks there. Same thing with Winnahaw. I would try and spend as many days as possible. But yeah, so I'd say if you draw next year, I could come for sure. But if I draw Oregon, I might be stuck here.
It might be. So it's a for sure, maybe.
It's a for sure maybe. Yep, 100% maybe. That's the only bad thing. Oregon's results aren't out until, you know, June 15th. Generally, they let, you know, so it's a late. And we're going to, I think, try and put in for Wyoming as well. It's kind of crazy. That's, I need to start, like, just mapping this stuff out because there's, I know, I don't, I'm not like many guys. I don't a lot of points everywhere, but guys really got to kind of start thinking about that, you know, bitter long term and thinking, you know, it's going to take this many points in that state to draw. So you plan that out in 2020 or whatever it's going to be. And yeah.
Yeah. I believe I've got 15 elk points for Nevada. And, so, I mean, one of these days I'm going to pull an elk tag there as well. And I know that's going to throw a monkey wrench into things because, you know, like Oregon, you don't find out till late on the, you know, around the 1st of June on draw results there. So
did you hear from your buddy that drew in Nevada,
Roger? Yeah, he hunted the whole season. So I haven't talked to him, but he was sending out email updates and he didn't end up shooting a bull, or I don't remember him ever even saying that he drew his bow. But they were seeing, you know, lots of bulls. And so, you know, we ought to get him on the podcast because it'd be fun to talk to him about how he researched. He spent an extensive amount of time. You know, he spent the whole season hunting plus, I think, at least a week or 10 days scouting, this year. And he spent, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks in there a few years ago in that unit. He had a deer tag, but he looked at the, you know, the elk. He looked them over pretty extensively there. And so he has spent a lot of time there in Nevada in this elk unit. And it'd be really interesting to, you know, to hear kind of firsthand how his hunt went there.
And he's also the guy that's very well versed in goats, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So it'd be fun to get him. He didn't bring his goats on that trip, but it would be fun to talk to him about, you know, pack goats and then also his elk hunt. So I'll have to reach out to him. We'll work on getting him on.
It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
And then he's just a pig guy too, right?
Yeah. He lives down out of Fresno, and they've got some really good pig hunting down there. And one of his main hunting partners is a county sheriff down there, and has managed to get himself, you know, access on quite a few properties there through, I think, helping out with marijuana eradication on different you know, landowners' pieces of land there. So he's yeah, they between the two of them, they've shot quite a few hogs down there.
Sweet.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So I am fresh out of tags. I was going to go to Alberta this year, and then it just, that trip ended up getting scuttled and got bumped to next year. So I'm actually, sadly to say, I'm done hunting for the year. And you still have a valid deer tag, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, so I've actually got a valid deer and elk tag in Oregon left. I drew with Oregon, you can put in a second choice and draw a tag and it doesn't take your points. So there's a unit here close that I drew on a second draw that I knew it was in January, but I didn't find out the dates till today. It was 7th through the 22nd, 3-pointer better elk, bull elk only. So wow. I still have that opportunity to fulfill.
Is that a recent addition? Cause I don't think I've ever heard of that, huh?
Yeah. So no, it is. It's, I think they started it 3 or 4 years ago. the Tioga unit went to bull only. So it used to be a cow hunt, you know, which you could get almost every year, but it wasn't like the entire unit. It would just have like smaller sections. Well, then, 2 years ago I drew it, but it was only the Elliott State Forest. And then after that, it turned to the whole unit. This, I think last year it was a whole unit, and then this year it's a whole unit as well. And, so it's one that I've been putting in, knowing that, you know, I haven't got to spend a ton of time in hunting Oregon in September. So if I don't fulfill my tag, then I got an opportunity to hunt late season, which it's surprisingly, I think can be a good, not a great hunt, but you know, in January, if you get some nice weather, those bulls will be out feeding in clear cuts and I think in some stockable locations. So
if you would have filled your Oregon deer tag this year, then during the general September season, you would not have been able to hunt in January. Is that correct?
This is elk. Yeah. But yes, no, that's correct. It's in addition to the general. So it's like, if you kill in the general, then you can't hunt this late hunt. And same with, so I also have a Oregon, you know, I had that Trout Creek tag for traditional, which we didn't hunt, but that tag's also good for the general regular early season archery deer and late season Western hunt. So, yeah. So that season, opens up here in about a month. I think it opens up November 12th and then goes through December 4th, 3 weeks long there. So I'm hoping to spend some time down there where I hunt and around the Thanksgiving period. And I don't know, I've been going back and forth, and I just got a video from a buddy, Garrett Rowe, that's got Heads Up Decoy and a bunch of decoy, you know, rut video of whitetails and some mule deer. And I've still hunted that and spot and stalked, but I've also sat on the ground or in a tree stand and have had close encounters on both, but I have yet. That's one thing that, you know, a good mature blacktail with my bow in late season has been my nemesis. So, I really want to try and to fulfill that, tag, but,
are you going to go back up in that same area? They got buried in snow there last year.
Yep. I'll probably do this, the same area. in fact, probably the same. I've got one little timber patch that I like that's, you know, pretty big funnel. And, I was talking, you know, in Oregon, you can actually legally bait for deer and elk. And, I got a friend, Jody Sear, which we need to get on the podcast. He's a wizard, deer and elk both. That guy is very well accomplished. You know, he's one of those guys. I think he's probably killed 25 or more bulls with his bow. And
dang,
yeah, he's a stud. And you know, DIY public land hunter.
You'd think he'd be tired of eating elk by now.
Yeah. Well, interesting. I talked to him yesterday, and he snapped his Achilles. He said yesterday was like the 4 month mark that. And I mean, it was a complete sever. It wasn't like a partial.
How did he do that?
Playing basketball. You know, you know, I think he's 39, 38, somewhere in there, 37. And just one of those, and it seems like if you see someone in crutches or running around that little scooter, you ask him how it happened. Uh-huh. It's like, oh, play the pickup game of basketball. And
so common injury.
Exactly. So he hunted and killed a bull this year, and he's like, his mobility was pretty limited, but, anyway, so it was kind of interesting. But he was telling me he's got these PVC feeders that he builds, and it kind of looks like a bazooka, just a big 3-inch or 4-inch pipe that he fills up with feed. And then at the very bottom, it's got that like a 45 outlet. And so he puts in a drain cap, and then it's just a gravity feeder. So those deer just stick their nose through that bottom, you know, it's kind of pointing up, and they just stick their, it just feeds as much as they take, but it keeps the feed dry. So I'd like to go down there and set up some cameras and just kind of get a inventory and a better understanding of their travel routes and how they move through there. So I've got, I think about 4 cameras now that interesting. I've never been in much in that trail camera game and that whole world. And Wes was telling me about how he was doing it, and it made, you know, instead of having one camera in one area on one trail and trying to, he's got like six deployed in a 150 yard circle, and, you know, trying to better understand their movements and how they come through there. Because if you just have it on one trail, it's like that deer may be in that area a lot more than you think, but you know, it just doesn't go on that particular trail. So that insight, I thought, man, that would be, you know, I bought us four of the cheapest cameras that I could, and I've got them ready, and I'll probably stick them up here. Probably that last week of rifle season, just the week before the bow season starts. So
there's a podcast. I want to say it was Jay Scott Outdoors at this was quite a while ago, so it'd be back in his inventory back there somewhere. But you know, about specifically about using game cameras, and there was some, as I recall, there were some interesting tips and you know, and thought process behind setting them up. So you might want to dig back in there and into his catalog of podcasts there and see if you can find that one and listen to it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. I agree though. Using cameras, man, they're super fun. I haven't played around with them too much either. In fact, a couple of times I've had one in my pack on a backpack, you know, hunt there when I'm in Nevada. And there was one area in that down in the hotel. I wanted to put one just to get, you know, pictures of bedded bucks. Not that I, you know, needed to know where, you know, if they're there or not, because I knew, you know, every day they're piling in there. But I just wanted to get, you know, cool pictures of deer with one. But I never ended up setting one up because I didn't want to go down that there. Hill more that yep, yeah yep. more than once. So I was like, man, I know I'm going to end up down there at least one time during the trip, and I sure as heck don't want to go down there just to retrieve a trail camera. So
yeah, I couldn't imagine being back at, you know, base camp and then like, oh, the last day, we got that camera.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't want to deal with that, but, a couple of times I've used them on whitetail hunts, and, it's like going to check your stocking on Christmas morning when you're a kid, man. It's so much fun going to, you know, pull a card there and see what pictures you got. It is, it's a whole nother element to the hunt that I never anticipated before and had never experienced before.
Yeah. So I've got that. I'm trying to figure out how many days I can get away. Cause I, like I said, this year, I figured it out. I spent 31 nights in my sleeping bag since August. And that was, you know, between Nevada, Oregon, and Idaho. So I hunted more than, like I said, I ever have, as far as days and all that. And then with Oregon also, you know, half day morning or evening stuff. I think all said and done, I had, let's see, 10 in Nevada, 14 Oregon, 13 Idaho. Yeah. Crazy of, you know, just half days or time in the field. And it's the first time that I haven't killed something in September. So that the taste of humble pie, is that?
Yeah. Right?
Humble pie.
Yeah. It's bitter, isn't it?
It's bitter. I keep playing through, you know, and the sad thing is I had my fair share of opportunities and I didn't capitalize. And, I don't like missing. I don't like admitting failure. And so I've been trying to work through that. And the one thing that I wish you could simulate that crunch time of, you know, the shot. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
And be able to practice and work through it. And I'm like, I don't know if I need to go on a pig hunt where I can shoot a couple animals, you know, I mean, just trying to think of like where you can get those more and more encounters to where.
Yeah. You need a shooting gallery.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't, it's one that, and I actually had a conversation, my buddy, Brian BMAC from Hush, yes, mm-hmm. Monday or something. I was talking and you know, he's like, you know, bow hunting is all about it's a series of decisions. I mean, if you look at it from this very start to the very finish, all it is just a series of decisions, and your experience based on, you know, helps influence those decisions. But he's like, you cannot simulate that decision at the moment of when you're going to shoot until that happens. Like you can practice as much as you want at shooting 3D targets or foam or whatever else, but to get internal pressure that you've built up to try and harvest this animal, all those things, you just cannot simulate it. And that's the hardest, you know, and that's what I learned. I made some decisions in crunch time this year that cost me filling a tag or not filling a tag. Mm-hmm. And, I'm striving to gain as much knowledge and talk to others and figure out how they work through it. And I wouldn't say that I had buck or bull fever, but I made some decisions and didn't execute like I have in practice. And I'm like, okay, I got to admit my failures here and figure out how to work through it and become a better hunter on the other end. So that's my quest this year, is just become a better hunter, better woodsman. And, not that saying killing is the only thing. I mean, I like I said, I had a phenomenal season, but at the end, it's pretty tough to fill the freezer with just a piece of paper. So,
yeah, I hear you there.
Yeah.
I had a couple of shooting left issues this year that left me kind of scratching my head that I need to sort out, you know, this winter and figure out kind of what happened. Try to rectify that. Another goal is I need to start kind of really laying the foundation for, my elk, expanding my elk knowledge. So got to look into Corey Jacobson's Elk 101 and then start monkeying around with diaphragm calls, in the off season here. And sure, my wife will be wanting to stab out her eardrums.
Now's a better time. I got a bunch of Phelps calls to send down to you and practice in your shop while you're building bows. Nothing better than
meow, meow, meow. Right. Yeah, I should reach out to Jason. Yeah, better hit you up, one of the two, and get some diaphragm calls and start. I can only improve my odds of filling my tag with, you know, some off season work. So,
yeah, he got he's actually got a prototype that we got to play with this year. A dome read, which I it's the only way I prefer to blow. Diaphragms has a dome on top or a plate type call. And he's got some new ones coming out next year. Well, I think he'll have them out before next year, and then a new bugle tube. So excited to see that. He's doing a good job. So.
All right. Yeah. So is he still got his full-time job and building elk calls on the side? I mean, it's probably two full-time jobs now.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's an engineer up there in Washington, does a lot of, I think it's civil work. Discipline mechanic or civil engineering, but yeah, he does a lot of stream restorations and fish crossings, culvert, ladder type, for fish. And, so yeah, he does that full time. And then, like I said, the Phelps, I think he's got some help finally to help him build some calls and help, do some of the machining for the open read calls on the lathe. And, his big factor, and I've talked to him a lot about it, is quality's number one. So he doesn't want to, there's a lot of call companies that all go through the same supplier. They've got, 10, 15 people on presses all the time, just punching out diaphragms. But like you said, to his specs, but he's like, I don't want to suffer quality. That's the biggest thing. I want consistent quality. And I mean, truth be told, you can buy a lot of different diaphragms out there and you buy 10 of the same one and you only get that 6 or 7 of them are the same. And then you get 3 or 4 that end up right in the trash. So yeah, his stuff's good. And he had a heck of a season. He's, I think he's in New Mexico right now on a muzzleloader hunt or headed shortly.
Oh, so right on.
They killed some bulls in Idaho, but we'll have to get him on and pick his brain.
Catch up with his adventures for sure. Yeah, I think, you know, you and I were talking offline and about getting, a bunch of guests on, just kind of recap how their falls, went and get their stories from their hunts and then also kind of take advantage of those stories and glean some, tips and as well as be entertained. So, we'll be working on that, over the next, month or so here and getting a bunch of adventure, podcasts going.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, that's, hopefully people have enjoyed our From the Field podcasts, it's not the best quality recording, but, like I said, there's no time then to do it right then and there. So, hopefully people enjoy that. But I think, like you said, there's so many things that you can gleam off having, others experience from the field, what they encountered and how they overcame some of those struggles. Hopefully we can, get a bunch of people there and recap their September and also, as we come into November, the late season deer strategies or late elk, there's some opportunities in Arizona. I know that a guy can draw every year, every other year, every couple years to go hunt some great units with great bulls that are not your traditional archery elk hunt. So,
what time of year is that?
Mid-November. So, yeah. I don't want to give away specific, but there's definitely some opportunities to look into that. Arizona's got some tremendous elk, but to draw a tag down there is pretty challenging. But I know that there's several units that really good bulls in there, and you can draw 0 points, 1 point, 2 point type stuff and do spot and stalk. And those bulls are out feeding and, it's pretty easy to, the hard part, and I say easy to spot them, the hard part's to kill them. And it's a lot of weather dependent. And I've been told there that, when you do, when you got snow, it's good, but also a lot of times that snow will come in, it'll warm up and then get cold again and clear. And then you got that crunchy, crunchy condition. So getting on them's a tough deal, but. Yeah, I'll have to get my buddy Chase Christopher down there in Flagstaff on the show. And he's got one of those falls that's like a dream season. He drew Colorado deer and elk, turned his tag back in because he drew New Mexico elk, New Mexico antelope, and ibex, or not ibex, but what's the other species? Oryx tag. And he also had a Arizona elk tag this year. So
good grief.
Or no, he didn't have a New Mexico elk. He was just Arizona. Anyways, crazy. I mean, and then he just had an odd ed hunt in Texas. So
wow.
They're doing some cool stuff. The Mountain Project. You gotta follow him on Instagram, your YouTube channel, but Chase is a cool dude and he's wealth of information that likes talking hunting. So we got him down on the list. We'll get on and one of those guys works hard. He's a lineman and so works a ton of hours, but also gets a fair amount of time off and got a family and kind of balance act of it all. So,
yeah. That's trying to strike that balance is always challenging when you have a family that you have to incorporate into the equation.
Yeah. That's, kind of an interesting subject for myself. I miss my wife dearly when I'm gone hunting. And this year, my daughter now, she's 15 and a half months old. So being gone now, there's, instead of just being an infant now, she's up walking around and jibber jabbering and can say hi and bye and, kind of but I still kind of didn't think that she had the concept of time per se.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so when I got home after Idaho and Oregon, I had been gone combination, I think 17 days total, walked through the door and she just started bawling and wanted to come, you know, give me a hug. And it was, different set of emotions than I've ever had, coming home. So,
tugs at your heartstrings for sure. Yeah.
It was just made me sad for being gone that long and guilty and dealing with that. It's, having a family, is definitely, with little ones, it's a different state that I'm in my life. So just adjusting. So,
yeah, they sure can gut you, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, I can't wait now to, you know, I used to always think like, I don't see how guys give up hunting time to take their kids. And now I completely understand how someone gets refocused and just focuses on their kids hunting versus themselves and the gratification in that. So that's another one. We got an upcoming hunt with, Trent got a rifle deer tag, and in Oregon, you can, do a mentor program. So kids from the age 9, 10, and 11 can hunt on a mentor tag on an adult's tag without hunter safety. They still can, you know, so they haven't passed hunter safety, but the adult's got to be there and accompany and be that, you know, but they use their tag. So Trent's got a rifle deer hunt last year. We did that. Wyatt killed his first buck at the age of 9. And this year he wants to kill a 3-point. So, it was pretty legit. This 9-year-old kid killed a buck. We took off from my house and I'm fortunate to have BLM and private timberlands. And it was over a 2-mile hike up over the top of this ridge and back down the other side, kills this buck and then backpacked it back out. So he earned every, you know, it wasn't shoot from the truck and drag it to the road and boned it out. And, you know, he packed the head and back straps in his backpack and never seen
good a deal.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
There's a hunter hooked for life right there.
Oh yeah. That kid, I know at his age, he's seen more stuff die than I had by the age of 18, I think. And, you know, last year, the bull that Trent killed, we were calling and it was in some thick reprod. So Wyatt was right next to me, but Trent was only like 15 yards in front of me and Trent shot the bull at 15 yards. So bull's screaming, breaking stuff. You can hear him breathing. And I mean, it was just an absolute insane calling. And, you know, Wyatt was right there the whole time. I turned it after, cause the bull kind of charged coming down at last light and Trent shot it like right at the last minute of daylight. And I turned to Wyatt and I'm like, did you think that was cool? And he's like, I don't know. It was loud and big and it was really, you know, I mean, it was like half this almost fear.
Right. Yeah. Overwhelmed.
Yeah. Overwhelmed. He's like, I don't know if he got him or not. I don't know if he's dead. I don't know what to think. And I'm like,
What a riot.
It was awesome.
So otherwise, what is it? 12 years old is a legal age in Oregon?
Yeah, 12 in Oregon. So
okay,
they didn't have that opportunity when I was growing up. And now I think they can even start gaining points at the age of 9. They can't put in for hunts, but they can get points. So by the age, you know, when they're, 18, they can have 9 points, 9 or 10 points type deal. So they can be light years ahead if, you know, so I encourage parents that are, and I think they just have to buy a youth license. I think they have to buy a license. So it's a cheap deal, but they can get points every year. So better. And I think you can even do it after the date. I could be wrong on that, but I think you can, no matter what, during that year, you can go in and get mentor points. So
good deal. Yeah, it's so important for hunter recruitment, you know, at this stage in the game, and getting those kids started early is great.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, kind of the whole realm now, looking at my daughter, she's got I'm fortunate to still have my very first bow that my dad gave me, was a Martin recurve takedown 3-piece. And, so that's hanging on her wall, and I've got a little pink toy bow that a good friend of mine, Clint Radford, gave me. So I'll be, you know, I'm not going to force the issue if she doesn't want to do it, but I have a feeling that she's going to be kind of the pretty tomboy girl. So I think, she likes dolls, but she also not afraid to get dirty in the horse arena and riding. And I think she'll probably take to bow hunting pretty, pretty well. So
good deal. Good deal. Hey, circling back around to your hunt coming up in January, what are your, have you thought much about tactics on the way you're going to approach that? Cause that's obviously, you know, not going to be a rut hunt and you know, that's pretty much the focus of archery elk hunting is typically, you know, bugling and what have you. So how, what's your tactics going to be, you know, hunting them that late in the season?
So a lot of dictation is going to be what the weather's going to be doing. You know, I've been up in the woods that time of year. And if you get a nice sunny day, it seems like those elk kind of come out and like, oh, stretch their legs and enjoy the sun and dry out a little bit from the Western Oregon monsoons. So if it's good weather, I'll get on a high point and glass as much country as I can. That's got, you know, newer clear cuts or small reprod trees, and go about trying to spot and stalk. And it may be a combination because a lot of times that time of year, it's foggy in the morning and then, you know, it'll burn off at 11 or noon or 1 o'clock and then you can see. So if those mornings are fogged in, I'll probably do, you know, walking old dirt roads, and trying to cut tracks. And if I can cut a fresh track, I'll probably go into that still hunt mode, kind of a, I guess somewhat of a rifle mode and cut tracks and follow tracks and just sneak in and hopefully try and find embedded in some, you know, timber, second growth type stuff. I had a friend that muzzleloader hunted, which is the hunt right before that. So it's like a mid December to the end of December hunt. And he's in this guy, I want to get him on the show, Dan Bowers. He's a killer. Doesn't matter if it's bow, rifle, muzzleloader, whatever kind of tag that guy's going to find. It seems like he finds the biggest thing and kills it or, you know, I mean, he's opportunistic too, but he's a great hunter and, he cut tracks on this bull muzzleloader hunting and just slipped along and just soft cow calls just of his covering his noise. And he said he ended up, that bull got out of his bed, you know, and this is like a December 20th or something a couple of years ago. Got up out of his bed and walked, and he shot him at 15 yards in the timber, you know, and he said he had just been soft cow calling as he slipped in on his track. So, yeah, that's basically either kind of glass him up and spot and stalk or still hunt, you know, kind of some bedding areas and where they're frequenting. So trying to cut some tracks.
Well, that'd be a good new adventure there anyway.
No, that's, I've kind of this year's been the year of reflection and, you know, Trent and I were talking about, you know, our experience in Idaho and even here in Oregon, we've always been somewhat one dimensional on our strategy to hunt elk and knowing, especially I've met more people and listened to their experiences and the term of there's 100 ways to skin a cat. And I think that's the same, you know, there's 100 different ways a guy can be successful in the field with a bow. And, I think, patience and adaptability is probably key. You know, if a guy wants to go from different terrain or different species, you know, kind of taking all encompassing knowledge base and applying it to that moment or that, you know, conditions. So I want to be more of a well-rounded bow hunter instead of just, you know, our run and gun elk techniques, you know, has worked great for us in the past. But it's not the only way. So hopefully the stuff I can take that I learned from you in Nevada and Glasson, and I got a pair of 12x50 Vortex razors after that hunt and mounted on my tripod. And they're, that is like a game changer for me being, you know, thorough at glassing. And I'm excited to put those to work and some other hunts. So
right on. Well, good deal. Go ahead.
Well, another side note. So we've been, you know, born and raised, we've been doing this YouTube thing. Did I send you the link to our latest video we put up?
No, huh?
Oh, it's Stalkers in the Air. We're flying down the zip line shooting a 3D target.
What?
Yes.
Yeah, I gotta check that out.
It was one that we put together, or we filmed right before season. But yeah, it's pretty fun. It was probably one of the craziest things I've done. And this zip line's like 900 feet long.
And holy smokes!
Yeah, this is out at the Fisher Complex, as we like to call it. They've got like a full campground set up that people bring trailer. Like 4th of July is a huge deal out there. And, there's usually, 50, 60 people. They've got this 2-story water slide that they built that goes into the river. A zip line on the river, a rope swing.
Good grief.
I mean, just all sorts of good stuff. So when we did the egg challenge, we filmed it out there from where the zip line started and shot an egg at a target down the hill. It was 100 yards. Well, this is like, let's shoot a 3D target from the zip line while moving. So yeah. Anyways, I'll let people watch it, but we just posted that up the other day and I thought it'd be a fun one for, it brought a smile to me after postseason depression. So you guys get on there, check out YouTube, the Born and Raised, and it's called, I think shooting deer from zip line with a bow. So, got to check that out. I'll send that to you, South. You can take
right
a peek.
On. But yeah, no, I'd love to see that. Good source of amusement there.
Yeah, for sure.
Right on. Well, I have to get back to work, start making sawdust again. So let's catch up later in the week here. Get us scheduled with Zach and then catch up on Nevada and what he's been up to the rest of his season. I've texted him back and forth a couple of times since we were up there in Nevada, but I haven't got a chance to speak with him. So I'm real curious to see what he did damage-wise.
Yeah, he had an interesting season. I'll let him fill you in, but he worked his tail off and he's got some results to share. So yeah, we'll get that recorded. And then, the one thing that, I put together, previous emails from our listeners. We've got some great topics to talk about, but also if you got some questions, specific questions, we could maybe do a Q&A or hit some of our guests that we've got upcoming that would be, their knowledge base is high. Shoot us an email, info@fulldrawfulltime.com. And we'll get kind of an ongoing list of questions so we can do a question and answer with some of these guests, or if it's one particular for South or myself. Like I said, shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you guys. We're just excited to be back in the studio recording and getting some episodes. It's fun to watch. I've been looking at stats and we're getting more and more downloads, every day. So really excited to see the growth of this thing. And, we're stoked to have you guys listening and tuning in, to the podcast here. So if you like what we're doing, maybe I should probably do another giveaway, don't you think, Sal?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. It's always fun giving stuff away.
Yeah, so if you get on iTunes, leave us a review. We'll do a random selection here through the month of October. Leave us a review. If it's a past review, fine. If you get a chance to get on there, rate us a review. And here in November, we'll do a drawing on some freebie stuff. I think I could either whip up a pair of Vortex binoculars or maybe a custom Spot Hog sight. So maybe tune in and leave us a review and tell us which one you want as well. So thanks again for listening to Full Draw Full Time Podcast. This is Cody Kellum and I'm out. And South, go make some sawdust, build some bows, and have fun in the shop.
Yeah, sounds great. Talk to you guys soon.
All right. Thanks again for listening.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Full Draw Full Time Podcast, please remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so that new episodes will automatically be downloaded to your device as soon as they become available. And while you're on iTunes, please take the time to give us a review. This will help us in the iTunes ranking and will help the podcast grow. Share it with your friends on social media. If you've got a topic or a guest you'd like to hear about on a future episode, please email South or Cody at info@fulldrawfulltime.com. Thank you for listening.